It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. We are off and running. Oh, turn the monitors down, Bob. It's about a minute past the hour. This is the 19th day of July, 2018. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. That is where, of course, that you go. If you'd like to pick yourself out a screen name and a password, jump into the madcap, merry, multimedia, wacky, zany, screwball, real-time extravaganza that is the Horn chat room during the hours in which this program is live from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday through Friday. Yep, and if you do, you will be greeted by the likes of and welcomed by the likes of Anatole and Jack Crab and Little Thunder and the Friends and more to come as the evening rolls on. You'll also be moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a spacing guild master, has chosen not to fold space this evening and has remained right there in the cool comfort of not the man cave. Yeah. And I always enjoy seeing Jack Crab in the chat room because I'm reminded of where that name comes from. I think isn't it the first line of the film? My name is Jack Crab. I'm the last survivor of the Battle of the Little Bighorn. Little Big Man, Dustin Hoffman. Fantastic movie. One of my favorites. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. You will also be moderated, of course, by pinch-hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. And here we are at Thorn in the Side Thursday. Already? Really? My goodness gracious. But we have thanks to send out to our subscribers. Subscribers get mentioned with their subscriptions every month with a shout-out, if you will. But moreover, a genuine expression of thanks for helping us keep this whole thing on the air. Thanks to Mike in Cascadia. Thank you very kindly. And thanks as well to David in Ohio. Thank you very kindly to Joseph, also in Ohio. And thanks to Robert out in Iowa. Thank you, Robert, and Joseph, and Mike, and David. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. You are partial sponsors of the program this evening, and partial sponsors of the Head On Radio Network in general. Thank you so much. It's a huge help. If you'd like to join David and Joseph and Mike Robert in the whole subscription thing, well, there's a PayPal button over at Head On Radio over at HeadOn.live. We're going to get Head On Radio Network back up and running. It's just a little complicated, but go over to HeadOn.live, click the PayPal button. There's a make this a recurring donation. Put like $10 in or $5 or whatever, Mr. Soros. Then you too will be a partial sponsor of the program, and you will be thanked as your subscription arises. Thank you very much to all of our subscribers, especially when things get the way they are. Well, like this week. But, you know, it's been slow through July. It's been a tough June, too. Tough summer, really, trying to reach the fundraising goal. So, you know, screw it. Let's have a nice little conversation this evening. And if anybody wants to know what the fundraising goal is, by God, they can ask. And I will happily tell, but or unhappily tell. You get the idea. But no, it's thorn in the side Thursday, and we've got a rose bush of thorns to deal with. Yes, that's right. Jack Crab in the chat room pointing out, or the Sody Pop Kid, as it were. Mm-hmm. You gotta go snake-eyed, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Brother Deacon Asa tells me all systems are go. That's refreshing. That means that we are hot and live and true on both platforms, both the Head On Dot live stream and the White Rose Society stream. My apologies, by the way, these are due. My apologies to folks who have been waiting for Dr. Bill's podcast feed. I've got a bug in the code somewhere. I must have put something in that's not supposed to be there, or left something out that should be. But anyway, it's not posting right, and I'm trying to get that sorted out. But a reminder. We now put all of Dr. Bill's, we put Dr. Bill's programs up on Podbean, just like we do this program, podbean.com. And you can go there and I don't know, follow it, or you follow, and it's all under the same account, I guess, where we post my programs. But the program for Tuesday and the program for Monday are there on Podbean if you go back a couple of days. So just a note, and I'll get the XML feed straightened out as soon as I possibly can. Okay, yeah. Places to go in regard to this being Thorn in the Side Thursday. You know, one of the... If there's any upside to what happened in the election of 2000, it has to be the fact that, and it's really, really tough for me to even sort of countenance this kind of thing, or ponder it. But if there is an upside to the fact that the election in 2000 was stolen, you know, just like the election in 2016, both stolen by the Republican Party and operatives for them, and yet somehow, and both stolen through the mechanism of the Electoral College, but oddly enough, and yeah, 16 years went by between those two, and nobody thought to maybe get a constitutional effort going to get rid of the damn thing. Racist anachronism that it is. If there is an upside at all to the election having been stolen from Al Gore, it is the fact that we did not have to spend 8 years listening to the mealy-mouthed pontification of Joe Lieberman. God, I didn't like him then. I don't like him now. And remember, he showed up at a Republican National Convention and did a little talky-talk for a while. Yeah, I know. But I thought maybe he might have disappeared from our public consciousness, but no, like a bad penny, he rolled back around, to the I saw this by our buddy Horst and realized it just had Thorn in the Side Thursday written all over it. Can you tell I'm trying not to go into the Trump swamp early on? Because, I mean, I am. I mean, I just, I can't. Well, I mean, I can, and we will, but... Lieberman is just a reminder of everything that was wrong in the late 90s going into the brand new century. And a reminder that things remain wrong here in 2018. He showed up on the op-ed pages of the Wall Street Journal to complain about, of all things... Now, background. See, I knew we could find a way to get work Trump into this. Background. For the last week, we've been talking about the fact that the President of the United States is a pretty obvious traitor to his country. And there's more evidence of that to go into this evening. And we've talked about the bullshit of double negatives and would and wouldn't and everything that went with that whole treasonous debacle. And then lo and behold, here comes Maria Butina, redheaded Hellcat, and the indictment of... And apparently it's a guy from South Dakota, the 56-year-old who was doing her homework for her at... Jesus, really? No, he was doing her homework for her at American University in the graduate studies program. And it turned out that Maria Butina had created some concern among her handlers and her superiors there in Mother Russia. Because it didn't look good for her to just be bouncing back and forth to the United States on a tourist visa. So she got herself a student visa so she could be an aspiring scholar at American University in Washington, D.C. Now, why she didn't go to a fine university like my alma mater, Harvard on the Monongahela there in Morgantown, or maybe a great southern institution like the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, or a fine institution like the University of Michigan, or hey, Stanford, or Cal. No. She wanted to go to American University. I want to go to American University. And she did. And she found a 56-year-old dude with whom she would occasionally have sex in return for him doing her homework for her. We don't know if he carried her books home from school or not. But remember, there was also the other guy that we talked about last night that she offered to have sex with if he would, we presume he, would get her a high position in a special interest group. The person who, as Darlene in Connecticut pointed out last night, went curiously unaged, 56 years old versus, who knows. No, definitely. I can definitely get you a job with the National Rifle Association. I know them all over there. They love me. Nah, that never... No, come on. That didn't happen. Wait. Could Maria Butina be one of the women in the PP tape? Nah, quit it. Quit it. That's just too much. But that's the kind of thing we spent our week on. Or have spent the week on thus far. We spent the end of last week sort of trembling like a dog trying to pass a peach pit, just waiting to see what the treason level would be in Helsinki and how much damage Julius Geiser would do to the North Atlantic alliance between the United States, Canada, and the Western European nations. And then it all happened, and the peach pit passed. And we, you know, was it last night, I think? Yeah? Geiser Disgustus was serenaded by a 16-piece mariachi band outside the White House. They were eventually driven away by Capitol Police.
Huh, music haters.
Right. And then lo and behold, here's this. Here comes an op-ed from Holy Joe Lieberman. Scourge of people who aren't Joe Lieberman everywhere. And what's he upset about? Trump and treason? Nah. Maria Butina? Nah. The infiltration of the National Rifle Association? No. Joe Lieberman's upset about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Hmm. Oh, he's quite worked up. He's in a dither. He's in a lather, and apparently in a high dudgeon. Jump from that dudgeon, Joe. Jump, or is it not high enough? I don't know. Is there a higher dudgeon we can get for Joe? No, she is a threat, according to his piece in the Wall Street Journal. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is a threat to all things good and decent. Mom, apple pie, Merca. The greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, in the universe, forever under God. Yeah, right. Now he's all bit out of shape about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez because she had the unmitigated gall to unseat a Democratic incumbent, Joe Crowley. And so Joe Lieberman, who went to try to boost the fortunes of John McCain and Sarah Palin back in 2008, Joe Lieberman wants readers of the Wall Street Journal to reject her and vote for Joe Crowley on the New York Working Families party ticket. Which would be kind of odd for the New York Working Families Party to offer him the nomination. So that he can run a third party candidacy like Lieberman did to retain his seat back in Connecticut. Years and years ago. Joe, of course, being a foreign policy genius, super genius, is worried about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's foreign policy bona fides. Now, need I remind us that Joe Lieberman got sucked in by the con job that was the run-up to the Iraq War, that Joe Lieberman was absolutely convinced by the pathetic tissue paper thin veil of lies and frauds and cons that were presented as a reason for going over and slaughtering the people of Iraq and wound up leading to a million innocent Iraqis dead and several thousand American service personnel coming home in cardboard boxes. Need I remind us of that? Yeah, that's Joe Lieberman, foreign policy wonk. Yeah. Well, here's from the piece.
Ms. Ocasio-Cortez didn't speak much about foreign policy during the primary, but when she did, it was from the DSA policy book.
That would be your Democratic Socialists of America.
Meaning support for socialist governments, even if they are dictatorial and corrupt, Venezuela. Opposition to American leadership in the world, even to alleviate humanitarian disasters, Syria. And reflexive criticism of one of America's great democratic allies, Israel. She has received the most attention for calling to abolish ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. This makes no sense unless you no longer want any rules on immigration or customs to be enforced.
Joe Lieberman is dumber in the head than a hog is in the ass. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, unlike Trader Joe, see what I did there? I see what you did there, Brother Deacon Asa. Wait a minute, you get a jingle. Yeah, that's a good jingle, Trader Joe. Unlike Trader Joe, Ocasio-Cortez doesn't have dual citizenship for those just-in-case moments. Her allegiance is to the United States of America, period. Andy the Angry Jew, subject line, Prick Face Joe. They're working the anti-Semitic angle on her. Already saw it on social media.
Yes, she is. Absolutely an anti-Semite. She brought me a cold cup of coffee one time, and that makes her a fucking Nazi.
Because anybody who ever brought Joe Lieberman or Alan Dershowitz a cold cup of coffee is, of course, a goddamn anti-Semite. That whole business about, I mean, that's a Trump talking point. I'm guessing maybe you remember how Alan Dershowitz was pissing and moaning a couple of weeks ago about how nobody would talk to him up at the Hamptons. Martha's Vineyard now. And he wasn't getting invited to all the right parties. Jesus, do not. Because, you know, I do these things, but don't. I've taken care of it already. The nightmares will be extensive. But do not think about Alan Dershowitz at the beach in a Speedo. Just don't. Don't. Because the image flashed for me and the horror. But I take it, based on the ICE line there in the piece, that Holy Joe is apparently the last person who will sit down and have coffee with Alan Dershowitz. And they both love them some Trump. Because they use the same talking points. The idea that if we get rid of the ICE stormtroopers, that somehow there will be no customs and border enforcement, which is absolutely bullshit, unless you're willing to believe that we had no enforcement at the border prior to 2003, that was just something that, Dim Leader or Count Dicula or Scooter Libby one of that filthy crew just came up with one morning, maybe say in 2002, in between sessions where they were ginning up an illegal war with Iraq, and said, you know what?
You know what? You know what, W?
What's that, Dick?
I think we need to have enforcement at the border.
That's a great idea, Dick. We don't?
Oh, no. So let's create the Immigrations and Customs Enforcement Division. We'll call them ICE.
I like that. ICE. It's kind of like how I like ice and margarita.
Yeah, I know. But no, we just didn't have a fascist enforcement squad out there, you know, breaking the feet of lawyers. As ICE recently did. We didn't have children being put in cages, as ICE facilitates. We didn't have any of that stuff. We certainly had Customs and Border Patrol. They weren't quite as out of hand as they are now. But, you know, there's the big lie. And if Alan Dershowitz repeats it, and Donald Trump repeats it, and Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags repeats it, and Joe Lieberman repeats it, then it must eventually become the truth. That we will, that we'll just have open borders and a flood tide of Mexicans will come, and Guatemalans and Hondurans and El Salvadorans will come streaming across the border, and obviously we're all us Merkins are just packed shoulder to shoulder like a goddamn Star Trek episode in here until we get called to the evaporator machine, and there's just no room for them. All of which is complete and utter bullshit. But there's Holy Joe, and it makes himself quite the little thorn, and reminds us once again, Joe, how can we miss you if you won't stay away? But the best part, probably, is the end of the piece where he says that people in that district in the, what is it, the Bronx? And I think our buddy Steve in New York may have some particular expertise on this. That people in that should reject Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in favor of Joe Crowley, quote,
for the sake of Congress and our country.
Oh, yeah. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, threat to America. Hey, maybe somewhere along the way, soft-skulled Socrates can call her an enemy of the people like he did with the media again. Sometimes I think it would just be a little bit of a relief if he'd go ahead and use the fucking German, you know, Lügenpresse, like his followers do. But this is what we have in the way of the thorn in the side Thursday, and plenty of it. Steve, we did hear from Steve. Two things. First of all, the Working Families Party has endorsed Ms. Ocasio-Cortez, and I can't imagine that they wouldn't. I mean, the Working Families Party got behind or gets behind, generally speaking, progressive-ish candidates. Second, how could anyone listen to a guy who can't even catch a wabbit? Those, yes, well played. Wait a minute. Yeah.
No.
Wait a minute. What? Yeah, Elmer Fudd. Okay, I go with Miss Droopy. You know, from the MGM cartoons, not Warner Brothers. God damn it, there's a difference.
Darlene in Connecticut, subject line, of course. You know why he's upset about Alexandria. It dredges up how he got his ass handed to him by Ned Lamont in the primary all those years ago. Douchebag Lieberman refused to accept the primary results, compelling him to run as an independent, and still, to my chagrin, getting reelected. Ned won in the primary because he excoriated Lieberman on his support for the Iraq War. And, you know, it's one of those moments when you wish there were really, you know, real ghosts so that maybe Joe couldn't crawl out of bed in the morning without the ghosts of thousands of American service personnel and a million Iraqi innocents just sort of surrounding the bed and doing the whole poltergeist thing and, you know, ghost blood and shrieking and howling at him until he pulled the covers back up. Yeah. Note coming from Flavio. It wasn't just the Iraq War. Remind the amnesiacs, Lieberman is a lobbyist for Trump. It wasn't just the Iraq War. Headline, Lieberman, introducing DeVos, fails to disclose that his law firm represents Trump. Former Senator Joe Lieberman, D. Connecticut, tonight introduced Donald Trump's controversial nominee for Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, who has no experience with education whatsoever. I added that part. To the Senate Help Committee, Lieberman lavishly praised DeVos, but failed to inform the American people that his law firm, Cassowitz, Benson, Torres, and Friedman, LLP, have represented Trump in all manner of matters since at least 2001. Such matters have included, but are certainly not limited to, the restructuring of $1.3 billion in bondholder debt connected to his Atlantic City casinos, which he bankrupted, a defamation case filed against the author of Trump Nation, The Art of Being the Donald, for stating that the businessman was worth between $150 million and $250 million, not billions, a suit Trump later lost, and the fight to keep filings for his 1990 divorce from ex-wife Ivana Trump sealed. Most recently, Lieberman's law firm represented Trump by threatening the New York Times for publishing pieces of Trump's tax return.
Stay classy, Joe. Stay classy.
Yes. Meanwhile, a note from Jeff from Hill Hole, Indiana. Fuck Joe Lieberman. Not with yours, Jeff. Not with yours. It's shit like this that convinces me that many Democrats in power have still not learned a damn thing from getting their ass kicked time and again. They refuse to listen to the people in order to hang on to their failed center-right bullshit, and we end up with a Republican House, Senate, and Supreme Court, and we get the orange twat-waffle Donnie Trumpinski.
Shut the fuck up, Donnie.
Right. Well, power is sweet, and when you have it, you try to hang on to it for all it's worth. Subject line coming from Ron and Raleigh. Damn it! Like a floater that just won't flush, Joe Lieberman keeps coming back. Fuck him. Not with yours, Ron. He was shown in Shock and War blathering about WMD. He was wrong then. He's wrong now. Absolutely. Which reminds me, you know who else was wrong then? Matthew Dowd. So yesterday, I just happened to catch a tweet, courtesy of our friend Kenneth, of Matthew Dowd pointing out that yesterday was the anniversary of the publication of Mein Kampf, in which the guy with the Charlie Chaplin mustache, at the time future genocidalist, said, "The truth does not matter. All that matters is winning." To which Matthew Dowd replied, "We must always be committed to the truth and love." And I retweeted it with a comment noting that for Matthew Dowd, the truth has apparently gained considerably in value since back when he was cheerleading the run-up to the Iraq war that resulted in the deaths of 1 million Iraqi civilians and thousands of American service personnel being sent home in cardboard boxes. We do remember the cardboard boxes, don't we? Because I remember it very well. I was still on the air in America's fifth smallest radio market over in Beckley when that story came out that we were shipping dead soldiers home in cardboard boxes. Yeah, you recall that was back when Dim Leader wouldn't allow the press anywhere near Dover Air Force Base in Delaware to watch the bodies, and that was, you know, maybe it was about the same time that the now departed Barbara Bush was saying that all those dead soldiers weren't worth troubling her beautiful mind. That Iraq war. But apparently Matthew Dowd, who now has a cushy, probably seven-figure position with ABC News as some sort of chief political correspondent or some such silly horse shit, and he became a never-Trumper. And so he's again Trump now. And he didn't like being reminded of all the people he helped slaughter. So he asked me, he challenged me, didn't like my retweet. I didn't add him or anything. I just, you know, offered my comment. And he asked me what I'd done, and I said, well, among other things, I've spent most of this century trying to stop a public health disaster that you and Bush wholeheartedly endorsed. Son of a bitch, if the little prick didn't block me. Thin-skinned, those loyal Bushies. They don't like being reminded of the evil that they've been responsible for in the past, but also in the present. Because Matthew Dowd decided he was all anti-Trump, but by God, he's never said a cross word about the Appalachian apocalypse. I guess he's still okay with that. Note coming in from our buddy Todd, Barbecue Todd. Lieberman voice, Jesse Lee on POTUS. Todd says, great Joe Lieberman voice. Jesse Lee Peterson says,
can you say 25th of an amendment?
Cowbell for that.
South Africa was better off under apartheid than they are now.
Yeah, you betcha, Jesse Lee. And by the way, I played that clip a couple of nights ago, and, you know, that was their celebration of the 100th birthday of Nelson Mandela. No kidding. Because that I should have noted that yesterday. Yesterday was the centenary of the birth of Nelson Mandela, who, you know, just us, we might remember that he spent 26 years in prison as a political prisoner. So, Yeah, that was worth it. Yeah, just a reminder. Your obligatory Star Trek reference, according to Lee in New York, seems to match Mark of Gideon, not Taste of Armageddon. Live long and prosper. Live long and prosper, Lee. Well, you know the one. No, that there's a world war going between. There's interplanetary war going on, and people are just they have to go and. Get in the machine and get vaporized, you know, by sort of randomly selected computer numbering. And Kirk has to introduce them to nice bloody warfare so that they can kill each other all fair and square. That's the one I had in mind. But it's, I think we've got a... We've got a promising thorn in the side Thursday here. And I was just reminded of something I want to consider queuing up for the bumper. Thanks for the inadvertent reminder. That's fair. Brother Deacon Asa says, may I petition the horn to rename Barbecue Todd Classy Todd so as to distinguish him from Cranky Todd in an alternative manner? That's not a bad idea. That's not a bad idea at all. So goodbye, Joe Lieberman. Asshole. There's some good news, and I like good news. A pluribus unum, one out of many. A Trump pick for a judicial seat on the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals out on the West Coast has withdrawn his nomination. File this under even a blind hog finds an acorn now and then. The nominee in question was Ryan Bounds. Now, I'm sure had he gotten a vote on the floor, he would have gotten the wholehearted support of Joe Manchin, but well, never mind. Democrats were uniformly opposed to this creep, but it turns out Even some Republicans had second thoughts about him. They were supposed to have a vote today. About 1:45. And then Mitch McConnell, traitor, wandered down to the well of the Senate and announced that, no, we're not going to have a confirmation vote on the floor here today. The vote's been called off. Nomination's going to be withdrawn. Because he lost a vote, McConnell did. He lost the vote. I know. David in South Carolina, Todd, the rest of y'all down there, you're going to faint dead away. Find somewhere soft to land. He lost the vote of, and I'm not kidding, Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina. The only African-American Republican in the Senate. Kind of makes you wonder why. I mean, the bias and racism and what must have risen pretty damn high for an actual Republican African-American senator to say, nah, you know, I eat a lot of shit sandwiches for having this job, being the only African-American Republican senator. But this is just a bite that I can't take. Why? Well, Ryan Bounds has not been shy over the course of his career in sharing his opinions on things. And in the modern era, that being a Republican, that means that he's probably channeled his inner Kliegel from time to time. See, this is how close it is in the Senate right now. This is what makes people like Joe, putting pressure on people like Joe Manchin and Joe Donnelly and Claire McCaskill and Heidi Heitkamp so very important. With John McCain out, the traitor, Mitch McConnell, would have needed every Republican vote, and he lost Tim Scott, and it was over. And he was not going to be humiliated by letting a vote go forward on the floor of the Senate in which he lost on a candidate that he supported. And that's sort of important in this process to note that Mitch McConnell supported Ryan Bounds, this creepy bastard. Now, what is it about Ryan Bounds that makes him a creepy bastard? Well, first of all, Tim Scott was kind of close-lipped about his opposition. He wouldn't tell anybody straight up, straight out, why he wouldn't vote in favor of him. He just kept saying, well, I need a little more time. I need to study his record a little more. I need a little more information from him. Talking to reporters, he said, I was taking my time to go through all the material. The information I had was insufficient for me to be a yes vote. Now, bear in mind, as a loyal maggot, Tim Scott is a reliable yes vote on just about anything that runs up the flagpole. Skid-marked underwear? Yes! A DOJ criminal division nominee who's up to his eyeballs in dirty Russian banking? Yes! So you gotta ask, what the hell? Well, while Tim Scott wouldn't say it, it's stuff that Bounds wrote back in his college days. And when Scott got a little bit squishy, along came Marco Rubio to provide a little starch in his spine and say that he would stand with him in voting against Ryan Bounds. And then once those two said no, a whole bunch of others, not a whole bunch, but several other Republicans said, I'm not feeling so good about this either. Trying to put the best face on it he possibly could, John Cornyn, the Senate Majority Whip from Texas, said, there was some objections raised that couldn't be resolved in the short time we had. They had all the time they wanted, at least till November. Possibly until January, maybe till January 2020. But the things that he had said were sufficient, Ryan Bounds, were sufficient to give a lot of people the creepies. You remember that scene in the film version of The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich? Where after the little guy's taken the pill and shot himself and whatnot, that everybody in the bunker pulls out a pack of smokes and lights a cigarette. Because they hadn't been able to do that for years because the Fuhrer hated smoking. Well, you get the idea that there might be. Now, I don't want to give anybody any false hopes. But there might be some Republicans in the Senate caucus who, if they felt like there was no way that they could be punished for it, might actually stand up when things get bad enough. Nobody could really find out what the problem was with Ryan Bounds. So finally, somebody asked Chuck Grassley, who's the Senate Judiciary Committee chairman, and he said he thought there may be somewhere in Ryan Bounds' past. Now, this guy was going to sit on the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, remember, that maybe Ryan Bounds had said some racially insensitive things. Yeah, insensitive. Right. Meanwhile, Grassley was perfectly willing to send, you know, on a straight party line vote, the nomination of Bounds to the floor of the Senate, which they did. Scott is clearly nervous about what he's done. He said, I had not tried to convince anybody to do anything. I just shared my thoughts and others said they were willing to join and ask for more information so we could have a better picture. So you're not going to get it from the Republicans. You're not going to find out because they don't like talking about it. They don't like talking about when one of their precious little judicial nominees gets caught being just like every other judicial nominee Republican who comes before them but doesn't get caught. But the Democrats knew. And groups that watched the nominees had figured it out. And what it turns out is that he had written, Ryan Bounds had, that he found the idea of diversity objectionable. That he thought it risible. He decried more strident racial factions of the student body. He said, I'm mystified because these tactics seem always to contribute more toward restricting consciousness, aggravating intolerance, and pigeonholing cultural identities than many a Nazi book burning. That's right. He compared people who want institutions and groups and organizations to look more like America instead of just being lily white and male. He compared them to Nazi book burners. Yes. When he was given a confirmation hearing, he said his writing had been overheated. And by the way, just for anybody keeping count, Trump has already put 23 nominees on the United States Circuit Courts of Appeal. He comes from Oregon. And it was most problematic for Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley, his nomination. But the bottom line is that Ryan Bounds looks at diversity training as unnecessary. And he looks at calls for inclusiveness in this country as being like unto Nazism. And of course, Nazism was not inclusive. Nazism was and is exclusive. Not white, not Christian, not fit to live. That's basically Nazism. In regard to Tim Scott, James in Illinois says, hey, Tim, beware of offers of small plane rides. Probably a good idea. And by the way, he's not an old guy, Bounds. He may be somewhere, probably a little younger than me. And when he had his confirmation hearing, Ryan Bounds said, I share the concerns of many that the rhetoric I used in debating campus politics back in the early 90s on Stanford's campus was often overheated, overbroad. Stanford's campus? Oh, okay. Jesus. That overheated rhetoric included a moment in which he referred to diversity training as, this is the actual word, a pestilence. Pestilence. Here, let's check the dictionary real quick. I don't have it memorized, so let me clackety-clack it up here. P-E-S-T-I-L-E-N-C-E. Definition. Yeah, that auto-filled. A fatal epidemic disease, especially bubonic plague. Huh. Wait a minute. What's another word for bubonic plague? What was it known as in the Middle Ages before? Why yes, the black plague. Let's put that into context so Ryan Bounds can't accuse anyone of taking him out of context. He described diversity training as a fatal epidemic disease, especially black plague. It all becomes oh so much clearer now, doesn't it? They can't help themselves, can they? Teaching people about being inclusive in our multiracial culture is a fatal epidemic. And this guy was one Republican vote, maybe one Democratic vote. Hi, Joe Manchin! Away from getting on the United States Circuit Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit. And the Senate Judiciary Committee had said, what? He described diversity training as a fatal epidemic disease, especially a black plague. Well, of course we recommend him to take his seat on the court. Of course we do, said Chuck Grassley of Iowa. Well, he's talked about that time that he referred to diversity training as a fatal epidemic disease, especially black plague. And he says that it was overheated, his rhetoric then. And I'm sure he doesn't think that black people are a pestilence anymore. I mean, we all say crazy things when we're in college. I remember that time that I was caught with a pig in the middle. Oh, wait a minute. Never mind, said Chuck Grassley. Not really. So, let's see. Keith says, please, Bob, I need relief. My ribs are hurting. I'm laughing so hard. It's been so long since I've heard that voice. The second I heard it, I automatically thought of Joe Lieberman. You never know when he's awake. When he is, you have to draw a line by him to see if he's moving.
I know.
And unless I'm mistaken, I'm pretty sure that's a Mel Blanc voice. And from time to time, Mel would work not only for Warner Brothers, but for MGM, and that's why there seems to be some overlap between some minor Warner Brothers voices and then Droopy Dog, who is, of course, I'm pretty sure that's Tex Avery over at MGM. Lee in New York, subject line appointing judges, says, I do not believe Donald Trump selected a single judge. I believe the Federalist Society does the work. Trump just puts his seismograph signature on it and proclaims it the greatest nomination ever. Oh, I think you're absolutely right, Lee. Absolutely right. That man couldn't find... Well, if Donald Trump was doing the appointing, we'd be getting ready to have hearings on Judge Jeanine Pirro. Which, more on that after the break, because we're going to take a break. It's about it's about 2 minutes before the hour, and it's also a Thursday, which means we've got the Green News Report coming from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. So I always enjoy that. Let's take that break. If you want to engage in some conversation, the phone line's open, area code 304-574-8178. I had a note that our buddy Jim is none too well. And said he was headed to the hospital yesterday. Jim, I hope you're home. And if you're not, I hope you're home soon. And I hope they give you the care that they need. Over there in whichever facility you chose to visit. We'll take a break. Like I said, I'm not going to hammer on fundraising. I'm just going to put the number out from time to time. The fundraising goal is $685. That's how far in the hole we are for the month of July right now. And I want to thank Gary and Gaia out in Oregon for jumping in. With their challenge, Thank you so much. That was a huge help. So that's what the number is. If it comes down, it comes down. If it doesn't, then eventually the program goes away. Well, at least we'll know why. So, yeah, break time. And a little piece of music from a local band here. A group called The Kind Thieves. The official video came out the second day of this month, and I thought I'd share it. Interesting lyrics. I've seen them play several times. The name of the song is Armageddon. You can find it on YouTube. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Do you remember the days when the skies are blue, the grass is green, and the war was new? The ocean stayed in place and you could breathe the air, but they covered our eyes where we could not see. They pulled the trigger on you and me, and everything that was true had turned to dust. just to get struck down.
It's Thursday, July 19, 2018.
Does your kid's school district test for lead in its drinking water?
Probably not. Less than half of U.S. school districts do.
Thanks to the leadership of President Trump and Administrator Pruitt, we have made tremendous progress over the past year and a half.
Following in Scott Pruitt's swampy footsteps, acting EPA Chief Wheeler weakens toxic coal ash water protections. June 2018 was the third hottest June ever recorded globally. Plus,
the world's largest hotel company is planning to eliminate 1 billion straws.
Marriott International becomes the latest major corporation to ditch plastic straws.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And I did work for a coal company, and I'm not at all ashamed of the work that I did for the coal company. I think it's been used by some people in a derogatory manner.
Why would anybody be derogatory about working for an industry which kills people and lies about it? Andrew Wheeler, acting chief of the Environmental Protection Agency, this is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, not that the EPA cares, but we have a potential problem with lead in the drinking water of our nation's public schools?
Yes, apparently we do. A new report from the Government Accountability Office has found that less than half of the school districts in the United States test their drinking water for lead. And of those schools that did test their drinking water, 37% discovered elevated levels of lead, which is a potent neurotoxin. The GAO report says schools that found lead contamination in their drinking water last year have taken steps to address the problem, but no federal law requires schools to test for lead in drinking water. 41% of school districts serving 12 million students do not test for lead at all. Every individual school should test their water, according to John Rumpler of Environment America.
We've used lead in pipes and plumbing and faucets and fixtures. It's a widespread problem, and we urge the schools to do more to protect kids from any level of lead in the water they drink.
Only 8 states require such testing.
I guess that would just be too harmful for our economy if the EPA actually required U.S. school districts to do exactly that.
Meanwhile, speaking of the EPA, former coal lobbyist Andrew Wheeler, in his first major action as acting Environmental Protection Agency administrator, on Wednesday weakened Obama-era rules that were intended to prevent toxic coal ash waste from contaminating drinking water.
The former coal lobbyist weakened rules concerning coal? Who could have predicted it?
The far-reaching rule gives states authority to set their own standards for coal ash waste, stored at more than 400 coal plants around the country, and even allows them to suspend monitoring for contamination. It also delays cleanup of unlined coal ash waste ponds. This despite recent public health disasters caused by toxic coal ash spills in West Virginia, Tennessee, and North Carolina. Earlier this year, a report issued by coal plant operators in 8 states showed widespread groundwater contamination from coal ash waste. By the way, thanks to loopholes in the federal vacancy law, Wheeler can remain in charge of the EPA without Senate confirmation through 2020.
Hey, that's fantastic.
Meanwhile, June 2018 clocked in as the third warmest June on record globally. That's according to NASA this week, coming in just a hair behind June 2015 and June 2016. It's a remarkable record since there is no El Nino present to boost global temperatures, and further indicates that the global warming trend observed over the last 40 40 years shows no signs of stopping.
It's a hoax.
Climate change is coming for your internet. A new study predicts that the undersea cables and hardware centers that provide the backbone of the internet could be flooded with salt water as sea levels rise over the next 15 years. Unlike undersea transatlantic telecommunications cables, these buried internet cables are not waterproof. The researchers from the University of Oregon on the study warned, quote, "We have to start working on all of the mitigation efforts today."
Either that, or I may not get to see everything on Twitter.
More not.
That sounds good.
Some good news, though. California has announced that its ambitious climate action policies are succeeding. Last week, the state announced it has already hit its target to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions 4 years early and has pushed its emissions back down to 1990 levels, even as its economy grew.
Good for us.
Finally, some more good news. Marriott International Hotels has become the latest major company to join the global movement to ditch plastic straws. The world's largest hotel company announced on Wednesday it will eliminate 1 billion straws and 250 million stirrers used annually at all of its 6,500 locations within the year. Sparked by a plastic straw ban in the city of Seattle that started on July 1st, Marriott joins Starbucks, American Airlines, Hilton and Hyatt Hotels, and other companies in doing their part to end the scourge of plastic pollution.
Thank you, Seattle. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters if the internet isn't out at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
The bluest skies you've ever seen are in Seattle. And the hills, the greenest green in Seattle. Like a beautiful child growing up free and wild, full of hopes.
12 minutes past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Hey, big thanks, huge thanks going out to Jack in Shreveport, Jenny in Wisconsin, and to all-around great guy, Steve, from Georgistan, alongside Miss Karen and little Cletus and little Twiggy. Steve says, Bob, they've revoiced the favorite number one guest basement bathroom for number two is now done by a different voiceover commercial. Suppose the original voiceover figured out there wasn't any future in bodily excrement ads. Utilize this however you see fit. Put this toward taking your charming bride out on an evening if you want. Well, thank you, Steve. That's mighty sweet and mighty kind. It's gonna pay bills instead, but thank you very, very much indeed. Let's see. Hold on a second here. Yay, I got it before it happened. Stupid Skype. But I got... Okay, so there's a call holding. Yeah, I think about that sometimes, Steve. Like the guy with, I mean, there's nothing, you know, it's not funny, but for somebody who's trying to get acting work, you know, you take the work you can get. You study your craft and you sit there working on your intonations and everything. Not that I'm an actor, I'm not. But I know people who are, and consequently you see... And tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps each day unto a dusky death. It whatever. Working on your Shakespeare, you know, your classically trained actor, and then you get the callback. You're going to be the guy in the drug commercial for the drug that keeps people's noses from falling off. Yeah, you're going to be the guy whose nose falls off in the middle of the commercial. Great. And you're also going to have a sexually transmitted disease, because the drug works on that, too. Well, there went my social life. Because, you know, he's walking... Hey, wait, you're the guy with the... And the nose, and the... And it all falls off! Or, you know, hi, buy you a drink? No! You've got that... Where the nose, and it all falls off! So I know exactly what Steve's talking about. Meanwhile, a note comes from Jenny as well. Sorry I don't donate a lot. Just got paid from some real art jobs. Woohoo! Well, congratulations. Your art, Jenny, is magnificent. And a day doesn't go by that I don't stop and ponder the sand hills of Wisconsin. Jenny says, I really love my Horn family congregation. My computer died, so I haven't been able to get on the front porch. But all's well here in Wisconsin. Well, I mean, Scott Walker, friend of Maria Butina and the NRA notwithstanding. Cheers. Cheers, Jenny. Cheers. Next chance you get, have a spotted cow for me, please. Someday I got to get back up there and, you know, just super healthy pancreas and, you know, pour down. Oh, man, a spotted cow on a day like this. Oh, go out, maybe walk around in the Pinocchio's a while and then throw. Oh, that would be heavenly. Oh, that would be wonderful. And thanks very kindly to Jack in Shreveport. Thank you, Jack, very much indeed. Jack with a note said, yeah, I got no idea how to spell. Hell, I got no idea how to spell her first name. However, I saw her on The View this morning, meaning Judge Jeanine Pirro. She was really nasty and got some pretty good pushback. Later, I heard her on Hannity's radio program for about 30 seconds while I was in the car. She's on a book tour. And, you know, that's one of those moments where I look up and I think, maybe like if I dropped 19 hits of really bad acid and just started typing, I could come up with a number one right-wing MAGA bestseller. But, well, it ain't worth the flashbacks. No. And I don't have the patience. I don't have to wait for it all to kick in and then wait for it all to kick out. No. Let's run over to the phones and check in, and we're going to get back to Judge Jeanine. Oh, what a piece of work she is. That's Shakespeare, by the way, again. What a piece of work man is. Miranda says that in The Tempest, I think. But let's go talk to Kevin in Colorado Springs. Hey, Kevin. I thought I had Kevin connected there. Daggummit. This late, by the way, if you do not have to update Skype on a Windows 7 or better machine, for the sweet love of God, don't. I didn't want it, but I've got it, and I hate it. It's just a giant pain in the ass. Well, here's Kevin again. Let's see if it actually connects this time. Do I have you this time, Kevin?
Yes, you do.
Glory, hallelujah.
I wasn't sure if I, because it rang like 30 times, and I wasn't sure if I hang up or someone was on hold, so I waited for you to tell me via the radio. So that's the problem. But anyway, first of all, I want to wish Jim the best. Hope you get well soon, Jim. Hopefully he's doing better today than he was yesterday. So.
Well, me too.
Yep. We can all relate, at least most of us in the Horn family can relate to illness. I know I can, I know you can, and hopefully Jim doesn't have anything near what we have had in the past. I just heard from a friend of mine, my caregiver. Her boyfriend went in the hospital yesterday, and he was having left-sided chest pain between his shoulder and his chest. Well, they sent him home. They ran the EKGs. They were all normal, but they were going to do a stress test. They sent him home wanting to set up the stress test, and I was just flabbergasted. You can't do a stress test in the hospital? I mean...
Isn't that where they, well.
Yeah, because.
Look, I'm telling tales out of school, but I don't think it's, we've talked about it before. Our eldest daughter with the toxic thyroid just had hers returned, or removed, and her mother and I were shocked, I tell you, shocked to find out that, well, they just did major surgery on her, on a bodily organ, and yanked it out and sent her home the same day.
Yep.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, I was just stunned because, you know, I have heard of people with heart problems that weren't detected by an EKG, and I was amazed they sent him home.
Well, an EKG, and I mean, it's my understanding, and I'm not a doctor and I don't play one on the radio, but an EKG is only going to tell you something either A, after the fact, or B, right smack dab in the middle of something.
Yes.
It's certainly not a predictive tool.
If the EKG is slightly abnormal, that could be a precursor to any number of things, but if you don't know what's happening and you send the person home between the time they send you home and you get scheduled for the stress test and that person has a heart attack, you know, I was just stunned. I was like, I know I've had a couple stress tests. I've had the chemical ones, and I hate those. But, you know, it was no big deal as far as what they did. They stuck an IV in your arm, gave it to you, and that was that. And they had to send him home. I talk about for-profit medicine, and that's all. I guarantee you that's all it was. So some doctor could get paid for an office visit as opposed to the hospital, you know, doing it right there in the hospital. And so I don't know what the world's coming to.
Well, the other side of that, though, Kevin, if we're being fair, is that nobody knows quite like the medical establishment how badly the hospitals are infested with drug-resistant bugs. And so part of the urge is to get you in there, get it done, and if at all humanly possible, get you the hell out before one of the germs that lives in the hospital and can't be killed kills you.
But you know why that is? Is because they pay the people doing the cleanup minimum wage, and at least in some of the hospitals I've been in, I suspected they were not here legally because they didn't speak any English at all. Nothing against them not speaking English because they're there to clean. But when you pay them minimum wage or below, that's the kind of job you're probably going to get. And I know when I was an EMT, at the main hospital that I went to a lot there in Hillsborough County, Florida, that hospital made sure back then, but we're talking 25 years ago, made sure that things were disinfected in that, but not today. And I just feel sad that people are valued so little that you can't pay them a living wage. And you think cleaning janitor, well, those cleaning people are very important because if they don't get the germs, just like you said, that's where we have all these drug resistant.
But Bart, the problem is it goes beyond simple cleaning, Kevin. It's the fact that for a while there, we went absolutely wild with antibiotics, and
yep.
we created the drug resistant germs by helping them evolve to resist the drugs that we were giving them using to kill them. And then on top of that, I've done some reading that shows that, for instance, you go and you buy your antibacterial dishwashing soap or whatever.
Yep.
Well, again, you're just helping the bacteria evolve to resist the stuff that kills the bacteria.
Well, the food supply, the antibiotics that are given to animals that we eat. Pork, beef, etc. That doesn't help either because you're ingesting that. Those antibiotics they give those animals go into you. And yeah, it's just sad. It blows me away that less than 70 years ago, women were kept in hospital 3 days normally after the birth of a child.
Right.
I've known women that were sent home not only same day, but hours after giving birth.
And the question there is, Is that because some guy in the insurance industry is sitting there going, you know, if I can just get her home in the next hour or two, that's going to look great for my Christmas bonus?
Yep.
Because exactly. we know we have data that shows that that's how the insurance industry operates.
Yep. If you've ever been refused by a doctor a particular procedure or medicine, you know that in many cases the doctor wants to give you this procedure or medicine, but some insurance person somewhere said, no, we don't pay for that. I've ran into it, and I imagine everybody in the Horn family has ran into it, and this isn't the way medicine should be. Doctors should be making the call on what medicines their patients are getting and why, not a tech at some insurance company looking at a computer telling him whether or not to approve it. And so I'll get off my soapbox on that, but it really just stunned me that they sent him home because, you know, he was having this pain right in between his shoulder and his chest. I wouldn't call it necessarily a classic symptom of a heart attack, but close enough, left-sided chest pain. And, you know, that chest pain can radiate into the left arm, so if it's between... And they did an MRI, too, on the shoulder and didn't find anything, so it wasn't like a pulled muscle or a ligament or tendon or something like that. And so... But... I don't know if you just heard, I caught it right before your show started. I guess the Tangerine Fuhrer has now decided that he wants to invite Putin to the White House.
Yeah, I did see that. And in fact, when I started the program, I said I was deliberately trying to stay out of the Trumpian swamp. But it's there, and it's irresistible. The best response to that, this idea that that somehow or another, it's breathtaking that he's decided that. Oh God, he's inviting Putin to the White House to double down, okay?
Yeah.
And I guess there'll be another secret meeting, but. It just so happened that when the news broke that invitation had been let out, Mrs. Greenspan over at NBC, MSNBC, was interviewing Dan Coats. Dan Coats is the director of national intelligence. And this guy's an old line. He's a Bush. He's a loyal Bushy, all of that stuff, you know, good God-fearing, et cetera, it's blah, 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 blah. And she told him they were inviting Putin, and he found out about it from her, okay? So here's the audio to that. This is, you'd say it's funny, but it's not funny.
I do want to say we have some breaking news. The White House has announced on Twitter that Vladimir Putin is coming to the White House in the fall.
And in that moment where she says, the White House has announced on Twitter, Dan Coats turns and mugs to the audience again like a dog trying to pass a peach pit.
Yep.
And then the following transpires.
Say that again.
He thinks she's kidding.
Vladimir Putin coming
to the... Did I hear you?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's going to be special.
Yeah, that's going to be special. Hey, he was kind of flabbergasted.
Yeah. Yeah, I caught that interview live, and he was stunned is not even the right word. Flabbergasted comes close, but gosh. How would you like to be Dan Coats finding out about that from a news correspondent that it was announced on Twitter? You know, and I think Mr. Coats also mentioned in that interview that Trump should have had people, national security people, in that meeting with Putin. I don't know if you caught that part of it, but it's just, I think you did it just before you were brought up that interview, but I'm speechless with what is transpiring. It's like we're watching them. This is like a movie, a fictional movie that someone thought up to make a movie out of. This, you know, that's my overriding thought. This can't be real. I'm basically speechless other than the.
Understand, Kevin, this is how he brazens it out.
Yeah.
It's Treason Summit 2. It's Performance Review 2. I don't know. Maybe Putin's coming to have a walkthrough at the White House and see if he likes the digs or wants to fucking redecorate, you know?
That's what scares me, is I suspect, as we all do, that there is something. Trump's the lapdog for Putin, but...
Well, but the thing is, we're beginning to learn a little bit about what happened in the secret meeting.
Yeah.
I don't know if you realize this. I get these headlines across my devices, alerts and stuff on the various and different news apps. And I saw one and I went, no, that's bullshit. That just can't be. And then I read the story. And it wasn't from a comedy site. Wasn't The Onion? Wasn't some sketchy site like, it wasn't from some sketchy site that just repackages somebody else's story and puts a bullshit headline up to grab clicks. It wasn't that. It was Newsweek. It's just Newsweek.
Yep.
And here's the headline. And this, when you hear it, you'll understand why my bullshit detector went off. Trump complains press didn't cover his private meeting with Vladimir Putin.
Well,
how can the press cover a meeting to which they were not invited?
Yep.
How can the press cover a meeting that was held in secret? How can the press cover a meeting where no notes were taken, where even the national security advisor, John Pornstash Bolton himself, was not allowed in the room?
Yep.
I mean, the most press coverage there can be of that, Kevin, and I mean, I'm not shouting at you, I hope you understand, is for the press to say, well, Donald Trump had a secret meeting with Vladimir Putin. I guess Donald Trump wants them to say Donald Trump had a secret meeting with Vladimir Putin and it went swimmingly and they had frisbees and wheat checks and they gambled about the room and laughed at each other's bad jokes and then filleted each other. What? But it turns out, and this is the part, it's a real news story because he really did that. It's an actual quote from Donald J. Trump. He sat down for an interview with CBS News. And the interviewer said, well, you know, the press only reported what you yourself said on tape, sir. The press only reported what you made come out of your mouth in front of cameras.
Yep.
And his response to that was to say, well, they didn't cover my meeting. The important thing, frankly, was the meeting.
Which they...
It's out the door, tearing at the clothes, tearing at the hair, running rabbits, eating dirt. I mean, what?
What bothers me is you've heard about the attempt to subpoena the translator, the American translator for that meeting, to compel him to testify before Congress?
Eh.
Why? way because the Republicans blocked it. Now, how many Republicans in the past few days, as you were saying yesterday, talk is cheap. There were several Republicans that came out and complained about what Trump said and did after that treason summit, but they block the translator from testifying before Congress. And if Mitch McConnell said, no, we'll allow that, it would be allowed. You know that's coming from Mr. McConnell. And it's the depth of Republican hypocrisy to talk out of the one side of their mouth and do another thing out of the other side of their mouth or a lower part of their anatomy.
Well, Kevin, I think again, this isn't a correction, just an idea of how we think about things. I think we're past talking about Republican hypocrisy. You know, Republican hypocrisy is what we got used to for a generation since Reagan. Republican hypocrisy is saying, we care about the precious little fetuses, and then on the other hand, turning around saying, fuck food stamps.
Yep.
That's Republican hypocrisy. What we're talking about now with Mitch McConnell and what we know that he did to keep the American people from finding out that there was an attack on our election, that there was an act of war perpetrated against our government.
Yep.
We're past talking about hypocrisy, and I think we need to readjust our thinking and start talking about Republican perfidy. Now, I know that's a word that the maggots will never understand. It's three syllables, and it doesn't have MAGA anywhere in it. But that's where we are. And I took as my departure point on that something that was tweeted earlier today. I forget who said it, but he suggested that the media, and I guess I'm an itsy-bitsy, teeny-tiny little bitty microscopic part of it, so I can do my part. He suggested the media stop using the term Russia meddled in our election. With the idea being that meddling is what your neighbor does when they come over and say, did you hear what those people across the street said about you? That's meddling. What Russia did was an act of open hostility. It was, in fact, and was defined as such, an act of war. And again, I'm not one to beat the drums of war. I've been at plenty of protests over the Iraq War that people like Matthew Dowd helped to start. I'm routinely anti-war. But by the same token, I think we have to acknowledge warlike acts when warlike acts happen. And so within that context, Kevin, the idea that we are going to invite the head of a state that has already engaged repeatedly in acts of war with us is repugnant to us as a constitutional republic.
Yep. Yep.
And James in Illinois reminds me, it was Richard Stengel who said that. The business about not calling it meddling. And I think he's right.
Well,
Rick Stengel.
It certainly is. It's just Trump. I keep saying someone's got to do something about it, but the Republicans, and it's got to come from their party. Unless the Democrats get control of the House and/or Senate, But someone's got to do it. The man is crazy. I don't know if you... I'm blind, so I hear, I don't see. That part of my sense is not there. Senses, I should say. But if you listen to Trump at the presser immediately after the treason summit and the press conference when he got back to the White House, that man was scared to death being in the same room with Putin. Just plain and simple. And when I got back to the White House, initially I heard in his voice confidence again. But then when the questions start coming, he kind of started to lose it again. And I guess the point I'm making is like what you just said about the headline of the press didn't cover our meeting. He's living in a different reality. And I think there is something to what you're saying about the inside of his brains being eaten out or something. There's something there. He's either on a lot of drugs or something, because this is not normal. And it, you know, I don't want a President Pence, but I think I do want a president, even if it has to be a Republican, with a little bit of sense as far as he doesn't have to be the greatest, bestest all the time at everything. And I'm, you know, I don't think any president that we've lived through would have ever thought, well, I should say, I should have qualified that because Truman did drop the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But ever since then, I don't know of a president that actually would have started a nuclear war. And I can envision Trump doing that very easily because he has to be the bestest at everything. And, you know, I don't know. I'm really grasping for words hearing that headline because that just, you know, that just tells you where he's at. He's not in reality land at all, period. And I don't know if you caught Sarah Sanders the last few days, but you can hear it in her voice. You know, even Sarah Sanders is having trouble dealing with all this. She tried to throw some press out of the room the other day, and they don't want to deal with the press. Sarah Sanders, I can see why she's quitting, because, you know, just dealing, even if you're supportive of the president and his agenda, dealing with his constant back and forth on a topic, you got to be going out of your mind trying to spin that in some kind of positive manner, you know. So
I'm less charitable, less generous to Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags, apparently, Kevin, than you are. I think she has no problem lying. I think she lies with comfort and ease. I think she learned it at her pappy's knee. I think they reinforced it in Sunday school and you know, Baptist youth camp and up all the way to where she is now. Lying is okay as long as it's for Jesus.
I'm not being more charitable to her, Bob. I'm not even saying she doesn't lie, doesn't have a problem lying, but if you hear her voice, that girl's stressed out. And it's because Trump keeps going back. I said would when I meant wouldn't, that kind of thing. And, you know, how do you...
Yeah, but, I mean, do you have any kind of mental image of her saying, oh, no way I can go out and say this?
Not that she can't go out and say it, more like, how the heck do I do it? you know, she's smart enough to be able to do it, to pull it off to a degree, but it ain't believable to anybody with, you know. And I just hear, I'm just commenting on the stress I hear in her voice is mine, to me. She wasn't like that a year ago. She was, that level of stress in her voice wasn't there a year ago. And who knows, and I would conjecture that some of that stress, who knows what is going on in the White House behind closed doors, how they're, you remember when Reagan was getting senile and how they were having to deal with that?
Oh, God, yes.
So triple that, maybe quadruple that for Trump. Because Reagan was just going senile. We, you know, if you've ever dealt with someone going senile, you know, as long as they're not violent or combative, you can deal with it. But this is just unreal what the way he is. And he's not going senile. I believe he's off his rocker, batshit crazy. So it just, and I'm just stunned by the headline. The press didn't cover our meeting, and that's, I've heard, I can't even go back and tell you what they were. There's been so many today. MSNBC right before that, what's her name that did the interview with Dan Coates?
Oh, Andrea Mitchell.
Yeah, before her, they had something on, and they were going through the various things where Trump's contradicted himself. And just today's contradictions of himself, you know, there were three or four instances of, not since the treason summit, but just today what he did, that I was just blown away by, you know. Reagan in his most senile moment wouldn't have contradicted himself like that, you know, and so I've dealt with enough mental people with mental health issues to know there's something not right with this man. He's either off his meds or something. There's something not right with him, and I don't, I wish I could say, that's the part I'm having another part dealing with, is I wish I could say that the election in 2018 would take care of it, we'd elect, because I think there are a good, I mean, what do you say, 35% of the electorate's maggots, but the other 65% of us, there's a good part of us that are enraged. And I think there will be more people coming out to the ballot box in November. But with the Russian meddling in the election, and nothing having been done about it, what's going to happen? You know, will we see, like you talked about with Bush in 2000? You know, I think that's very possible that'll happen again in 2018. I don't have any confidence that it won't. So, you know, I firmly believe what you say. We're controlled by a 35% plurality of people, and that worries me. And I, you know, but the only thing I can do, I had a girl on Twitter tell me she wasn't going to participate in the primaries, hasn't participated in the Democratic primaries, you know, one of your sparkle pony fart people who, you know, I'm not going to participate anymore because my candidate didn't win. And I nicely replied back to her that, you know, at least by participating in the primaries, I know I did my part. My candidate might not always win, but I know I went out and voted for him or her. And I can't not sit back, because sitting back and not voting ensures that the candidate you don't want to win will win. And so I hope maybe that's – I know that message is not lost on anybody listening to this show, but there's a lot of people out there, you know, that – and that's the way to defeat it. To do, even with the Russian so-called meddling, the act of war that they did, even if that does happen in 2018, if 90% of us went out and voted, we could overcome that. But when was the last time you heard of the 90% turnout rate for an election?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the problem, is people do not value the right they've been given to vote. And so I wish I could say I had more confidence in the 2018 November election, but and I'll go out and vote.
Hell yeah, and tell your friends and neighbors, at least the ones that aren't maggots.
Yep. Yep, the ones that, I haven't dealt with any of the maggots, but prior to Donald Trump being on the scene, if I knew a Republican was going to go out and vote and I happened to be talking to him, I would say things like, it ain't worth it to go out and vote, just to keep them from going to vote, you know. And but the Republicans do a good job of bringing out all these fake issues of the little fetuses in abortion and, you know, dog whistle issues is what I'm saying. And the Democrats, for the most part, still haven't tapped into it like I wish they would. But there's one overriding issue for the 2018 election that any Democrat running anywhere should be focusing on: Trump and the Republican collusion. And when I say Republican collusion, the enabling of Trump by the Republicans.
And look, we don't have to limit ourselves, Kevin, to talking about the Russian aggression. There's a reason to stop Trump. You can take Russia entirely out of the equation, as some members of the Purity Patrol insist, and it still becomes important. 2019, the budget deficit is going to explode.
Yep.
Okay, so whatever, and as the tariffs continue to have their impact, there's some big shit going to hit the fan. Like I said earlier, he already has 23 appointees on the United States Circuit Court of Appeals. Okay. That's 23 more than he ever should have had, because he never should have had become president. And that's the bottom line. He is an illegitimate chief executive. And as such, everything. Now, look, Barack Obama was overwhelmingly elected twice. There was no question whatsoever about the validity of his presidency. He won majorities both times.
Yep.
And yet the Republicans said, we don't care about the will of the people. We're not going to let him be a president. We're not going to let him have an agenda. We're going to stop him at every turn. And so even when we had the House of Representatives, they stopped him in the Senate. Mitch McConnell was dedicated. The traitor Mitch McConnell. We now know the traitor Mitch McConnell was dedicated to stopping whatever he wanted.
Yep.
Now, if you can do that to a president who was legitimately elected, why should Donald Trump be able to have a single piece of legislation? I don't care if he wants to name, if he wants to rename the post office in Busted Knuckle, Montana. Don't let him do it.
That's right.
And so from fiscal issues to issues of immigration to issues relating to the LGBTQ community to issues relating to a woman's bodily integrity to issues dealing with the fundamental decency that we like to think we have as a people.
Yep.
Everything must be stopped cold.
Yep.
And the only way that happens is in 2018. And if there are people out there who are saying, oh, I just can't go vote because goddamn Debbie Wasserman Schultz, you know, fuck them.
Yep.
You're part of the problem. You're not part of the solution.
Nope. Because all these issues you just mentioned, there's not an issue that if you're even remotely progressive, that is not on the table. And most of those issues for a singular person will touch them in the pocketbook somewhere, some way.
Absolutely.
But if you're not going to vote because of DSW or Chuck Schumer or whomever, you weren't really dedicated to getting progressive values elected. If Debbie Wasserman Schultz can stop you from voting because you don't like what she said or did. And that just, you know, I've been fed up with any number of candidates or issues or whatever, but I can't remember in this single anything, candidate, issue, party, whatever, that has ever stopped me from going out and voting. And I won't this time because I know the importance of it. And there's so many ways to vote. I wish we'd go back to a paper ballot and counting them by hand, but that's not going to happen. So they make so many different ways for you to vote, online, absentee voting, what early voting, whatever. There shouldn't be an excuse for an American anywhere not to have voted, unless they're sick or in a hospital or, you know, something like that.
But let's also acknowledge that the Republicans will do everything in their power to stop people from voting.
That's right.
From soft voter suppression, supporting third parties who say, there's not a dime's worth of difference between the Democrats and the Republicans.
Yep.
Okay, that's soft voter suppression. To active voter suppression, like bullshit voter ID laws and poll challenges, provisional ballots, monkeying with the voter rolls. That's hard voter suppression. And the Republicans have to have that in order to cling to what remains of their power.
Yep. Yep. And I think, I can't remember when it was sometime last year maybe, there was the Nazis at the polling place that were threatening people. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, but of course Fox News TV Radio Rwanda is only concerned with the new Black Panther Party.
Yep.
I mean, those little bastards are still talking about that, aren't they?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't know because I don't listen to them. I
know you don't. Right. You value your mind. You don't listen to that and have your brains chewed away.
And that bubonic plague remark, that needs to be brought out in the media. Will it be? I doubt it.
Well, the guy's gone now, so probably not.
Yep.
Pestilence.
But it was a Republican that said it, and it ought to be reported as such. But I, other than MSNBC, maybe, I doubt you'll hear a thing about it.
Oh, I don't think anybody will drill down that far. That's just the kind of thing I do because I practice the art of word knowing.
Other than that, how's your weather there in West Virginia?
We've had some exquisite days, and looks like we might be getting some rain soon, but it has been nothing short of beautiful. Next week shows, and you know, it's that time of year. Stuff pops up, little pop-up thunderstorm, then done. But next week, starting Saturday, we've got a lot of thunderstorm symbols.
The reason I bring it up is because the record high for the date here in Colorado Springs was 95. And they were predicting us to get up at least to that and said we might break a record. And then we're supposed to be getting some storms. But again, you know, these are records that, you know, shouldn't be broken. Here in Colorado Springs in late July, we should be going into the monsoon season, and it still should be warm, but not 97 degrees warm. And, you know, it's just, to me, it as dry as it's been. I mean, we had two fireworks, maybe one fireworks celebration this year, and that was inside the baseball stadium. The rest of the fireworks celebrations were canceled because it's been so dry. And you know about the wildfires we've had out here out west. And, you know, but they still deny the global warming when the proof is right there in front of them. And
they always will, because it's good for their pocketbooks. It's like fetal heartbeat and fetal pain bills. There's no science that supports it, but they support it because it's good for their purses.
Yep. Well, I don't know. The weather this year has been interesting from the fact that a normal summer for us, and I've lived here 20 years now, and what I would call a normal summer, we have about 2 weeks sometime during the summer, usually late June, early July, where it's just god-awful hot. It doesn't get below 70 at night. It hits 90-something in the daytime. But after that two-week period, it goes back kind of to a normal range. Rarely above 85. We're 6,000 feet up. It shouldn't be going above 85 too often anyway. But while this summer I wouldn't call the hottest summer I've ever seen in terms of that two-week period, because we didn't have that two-week period. We had cycles of it getting as hot as it is like today, and it would do that for a week or so, then it would cool back down to normal, then back to the hot again. And that's been going on since probably early June, back and forth. And I would call the weather strange. I don't think there's anything that I could call a normal anymore, because the weather just is so strange. And now we're going into our supposed monsoonal season, and because of all the wildfires, when we do get the rains, we're having all the flash flood warnings because the land's been burned off and the water has, you know, nothing to soak it up, so it just all collects. So, and if it had happened from just lightning, you know, that's kind of nature, you can't do anything about that. But a good number of these fires have been intentionally set. And morons who couldn't, they had do not burn bans in effect for at least a week. And these people, kids, 18, 19, 20 years old, we had somebody shooting off tracer rounds with the burn ban going on that started a fire. We had these 18, 19-year-old kids who started a fire because they went out in the middle of the Pike National Forest and decided they would camp. They said they saw a bear. Now, the bear wasn't threatening them or anything, but they saw a bear. So
bear, bear needs to die.
No.
No?
Bear prompted them to leave without putting out their campfire.
Ah, left in a hurry.
But the bear did not get near the campsite. They saw the bear from afar off. It wasn't like, we got to leave now because the bear is trying to get into our campsite kind of thing. No, I could understand. And they confessed to that. They saw a bear and decided they would leave, but they didn't bother to put any water on the campfire, and they shouldn't have been burning anyway.
I'm surprised they weren't able to piss it out, seeing they were probably pissing themselves.
Well, you got to understand, Bob, seeing a bear from 500 yards off isn't really right exactly.
Oh, God, no, if Agnes saw a bear at 500 yards, she'd be like, come on in closer, baby, let me get a better look.
That's right, yeah. These people, we got to leave, just leave the campfire, nothing can happen.
Yeah, right.
And then we had amazingly, this guy didn't get deported. He's been illegally living here, 17 years, I think they said. He was a good white man from, he was Dutch. And he did not get deported. He started a fire, and he was a pyromaniac. He sat there, they have pictures of the man sitting in his car watching the fire that he started. So, you know, I don't know. I guess he, for some strange reason, though, the INS didn't bother to deport him because he had overstayed his visa by 17 years. So, you know, but.
Well, yeah, people make honest mistakes.
Well,
like, you know, like when red-headed Russian spy, who's been back and forth on a tourist visa, decides suddenly, you know, she wants to become a American college student and go to fraternity keggers at the American University.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I've been wondering, surely you could go through a list of Trump officials, people higher up in the Trump campaign, whether they're in the White House or maybe work outside the White House, and you can whittle that list down to a few people that are 56 years old, can't you? You know, the unnamed person that was 56 years old?
Yeah. Yeah, well, the unnamed 56-year-old from South, probably from South Dakota.
Yep. Exactly, yeah. We'll see what happens with it. I'm hesitating because I don't want to wish ill on anyone, but this Trump machine has got to be stopped in its tracks. And if it takes, I'm like you, I don't want to see the P-tape.
I want to see it. I want everybody to know it's out there. Now, I think it would be valuable if you could, like, put a mask on. It's kind of like Plato's allegory of the cave. I don't want to see what the people in the cave are watching. I just want to watch the maggots watch it.
Yep.
I want to stand up in front of the crowd, a whole crowd of maggots in a theater, watching the pee-pee tape. And I just want to watch the maggots watch it.
Yep.
And then stick a microphone in their face and afterward and let them and listen to them say, well, see, that's what it takes to make America great again. Sometimes you got to pee on Barack Obama's bed. Wouldn't have to pee on it. Wouldn't have to have them hook them Russian whores pee on his bed if he'd have been a decent human being instead of a Kenyan Muslim you slurper, and we know he was.
Yeah, well, there is the difference between a believing and fact.
Well, they're not much for facts. They're all about their believing, no doubt about it.
That's right. So, I'll let you go, Bob. I just wanted to call in. I again, Jim, get well soon, and so I will let you go.
All right. Stay cool. Stay out of that heat, Kevin.
Well, being 6,000 feet up, I am somewhat secure in the knowledge that within the next 6 weeks, it should be cooling off around here.
Yeah, you'll be cooled off by 6 feet of snow, right?
Yeah, but hey, it beats, as long as it doesn't get to zero or below, I'm fine. Yeah, and I grew up in Florida, but I'm perfectly fine with anything above zero compared to this 97 degree heat. I can live with, because the way I look at it, yeah, I got an air conditioner, but that costs money, and when it's cold in the winter, I've got steam heat. Doesn't cost me anything, so I'm good with steam heat. I can always open up the window if it gets too hot in here with the steam heat.
Right.
But you can't open up the window and cool it off when the temperatures outside are as hot as it is. So I'm always rooting for fall up to mid-spring, and after that, nah, I'm not so much into it anymore.
Well, Kevin, you have yourself a good evening.
Thank you, Bob.
All right, you take care.
You too.
Bye.
Thank
you. It's our buddy Kevin calling from Colorado Springs, 11 minutes past the hour. I have thanks to send out to Keith. Thank you, Keith, for jumping in on the fundraising this evening. Thank you very kindly. That takes us down to... takes the deficit down to $575. Thank you, Keith. Thank you very, very much. Y'all are the reason this continues to happen and has stayed on the air as long as it has. Thank you. Let's see. Line's open if anybody else wants to jump into conversation, but I really do want to address the issue of Jeanine Pirro. Because she got her ass handed to her today. She's a fraud. She appeared on The View, and maybe it's best working backwards so we can understand what a liar she is. She's hustling a book. And she finished her afternoon by crying on the great big treason loving shoulder of the life support system for a haircut, the Hannity job. And she went and got a Hannity job from him on the radio, talking about how cruelly, cruelly she'd been treated by that mean, awful Whoopi Goldberg over on The View, and how they ambushed her with Anna Navarro. Right.
Now.
GDP under Obama was barely one. We're going up to four.
So
you want to talk about him?
I also think it's important, as we said, 89% of the Republican Party still supports him. He still has huge popularity in the country.
Yeah, that's some of what went on. During let's move into the heart of the conversation, hopefully. We'll go back to the actual audio later.
And then on me. I sat there as Whoopi Goldberg pontificated about how horrible Donald Trump was, and at one point I said, I'm here to talk about the book, and then she went ballistic. She ended the segment. She said, that's it, I'm done. And what people didn't see who were watching the show was she yanked away from the desk or where we were all sitting, and she decided that she was going to end it. No one saw that, but it got worse. When I went off the stage, Sean, I was walking downstairs, and I said something like, Whoopi, I fought for victims my whole life, and she came at me as I was leaving. And she said, F you, in my face, literally spitting at me, F you, get the F out of this building.
Good for you, Whoopi. Good for you. See, what you got here is Jeanine Pirro trying to jump up on the cross because it's almost a job requirement if you're going to be a butthurt maggot. And in jumping up on the cross, she lies. Because, it's not a lie so much as a sin of omission. She lies about the fact that when it happened and they went to break, the entire audience got on its feet and gave Whoopi Goldberg a standing ovation, and even the crew were giving her a standing ovation for telling off a miserable, lying POS like Jeanine Pirro. Okay? But Jeanine doesn't mention that when she's up there, you know how tough to talk it is? You know, sometimes you'll have a couple of nails in your mouth, and you don't want to... It's tough to talk with nails in your mouth while you're hammering them into your palms and your feet and shit. But she managed it. Oh, poor baby. She's so put upon. Well, let's see what actually, happened, shall we? Or here, let's hear what happened. We'll start with the intro. It's not that long a clip. Here we go.
With Judge Jeanine Pirro, I wanted to get into the book a little. You tackle the anti-Trump conspiracy in your new book called Liars, Leakers, and Liberals. Now, that title could be offensive to some.
In today's age, you think?
I thought she was describing the Trump White House. Liars, leakers, and liberals.
Oh, that's Anna Navarro that she didn't want to be on stage with.
And why you wrote the book?
Well, I wrote the book because I'm not an ideologue.
Yeah. Yeah, she's not an ideologue the way I'm not a white guy. And just a reminder, I'm so white I burn under the refrigerator bulb. So we've got that at least taken care of.
I mean, I have been in the crime business for over 3 decades. And
yeah, no shit. She's over at Fox News for how long? And then Fox News winks at treason and traitorous conduct? Okay.
I think I said that before. And I know a con when I see it.
She's a maggot. Yeah, she's got her eyes wide shut to the con.
And I think that what has happened in the last...
Yeah, they're laughing at her. It's not going well already.
This happened truly in the last campaign. And everybody needs to be concerned about that. Lady Justice is supposed to be blind. And when you...
And with Trump, she's also supposed to be stupid.
Start creating fake investigations, fake counterintelligence. You saw it yourself with Peter Strzok, who comes out and basically says he hates the president and he's going to take care of everything. They then go to a judge and get a warrant. That's
not true. See, let's see. The clip is 4 minutes and 39 seconds long. We're a minute and 7 seconds in, and she's already into at least 2 lies that go unchallenged. Peter Strzok was not the basis for the FISA warrant. It was George Papadopoulos running his mouth, a couple of bottles of Merlot too far into it in a London bar, yakking to an Australian diplomat who then turned around and got hold of the United States government and said, I think y'all may have, it's none of my business, but you may have a bit of a, Russian espionage problem there. Right, mate? Yeah. And that was the basis of the FISA warrant. Not Peter Strzok's text message. Jesus Christ. But the maggots believe that shit. Peter Strzok with his little hammer and his thumbs, and he was thumbing that, we'll stop Donald Trump, and won't we, he said to the FISA court judge. But there's another lie coming. Hold on.
It's a problem for me, and it should be a problem.
Can I ask you? You just said your
warrant. Look, I've been a judge. I've signed those things. The
No, you lying piece of shit. You have never signed a FISA warrant in your godforsaken life. You have not sat on the FISA court. It's pathetic. This woman may at one point in time have signed a search warrant or two or dozen. A search warrant in a state court is far and away different from the standards that have to be met in order to obtain a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act warrant. The controlling statutes are entirely different. And I doubt if Jeanine Pirro could cite you to the relevant passage in the United States Code that controls FISA Act warrants. But the bullshit that she peddles over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda isn't going over so well with a bunch of people who aren't maggots.
Warrant was based on a fake document by an opposing candidate in a national presidential race.
The fake document she's talking about is the Steele memo. Christopher Steele, we touched on that last night. The document was not fake. I don't know what the little thing, the little neurons firing between the among the misshapen and malformed. The electrical impulses between the misshapen and malformed neurons in her brain are trying to say. But the Steele memo and the Steele dossier are very much real. It's a real dossier compiled by a real investigator with real experience in MI6 in the British government who went into business for himself. So, no, it's not fake. And again, she's talking to people who don't buy her act.
This is what happens
in
third
world
countries.
It was not only based on that,
countries.
And you know that.
I do know. So it is based on that.
You're not an ideologue.
Yeah. No, I'm not. I am in law enforcement.
Let me ask you the question.
I am in law enforcement. No, you aren't. You are a prattler over on Fox News TV. And frankly, you're making a shitload more money than you ever made sitting on the bench. But you are not in law enforcement. Freeze, Judge Jeanine Pirro. You're in violation of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda standards of propaganda. Don't move.
Right, and
do you think Donald Trump embraces and embodies conservative ideology? Remember, he used to be.
Because Ana Navarro really is a conservative, Republican, you know, right wing, you know. Yeah. She just happens to be never Trump. She's one of those people that's, as soon as we get rid of Trump, we'll go right back to being the Republican she always was. Arthur in the Arthur via email says, "What you didn't see? Come on, Bob, it was awful. What you didn't see was how Whoopi threw a hook at her and said, 'Get over here!' and gave her an uppercut, and the crowd chanted, 'Finish her!' and the music played." Yes, straight out of Mortal Kombat. Absolutely. A little cowbell for Arthur on that. Yes. Meanwhile, Steve in New York, Judge Pirro, "Let me finally set the record straight," and Steve would know, regarding this alleged judge. She was a county court judge. Bob, this is essentially a small claims and just above that court outside of outside of New York City. So are you telling... Okay, so let me see if I can get a comparison going here. The way the court system's structured here in West Virginia, we have magistrate court, then we have circuit court, that's the trial court of record, and then we have the West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals, which is apparently dirty as all hell. And a bunch of them are, at least one of them, real busy getting indicted. But anyway, the lowest court is magistrate court. It handles small claims of less than $1,000. It's where you get arraigned if you're misdemeanor charges, things like that. It's where your petty larceny goes and your domestic violence and things like that. That's the kind of judge she is. Oh my God! It's not even a court. If you have a jury trial in magistrate court in West Virginia, the record is a tape recording made. There's no stenographer. There's no robes. No. Okay. Thanks, Steve. That clears up a lot. Justice Learned Hand. She ain't.
I had a different position on pro-choice. He's imposing tariffs. He's against globalism. Do you think he is an ideologue that is faithful to conservative policies?
You know, I'm not here to talk about what Donald Trump is and isn't.
Yeah, well, except when you were, but you got called on your bullshit.
You want to talk about Donald Trump? You tell me what metric in this country is worse off. Unemployment is lower than it's been.
She didn't ask you about unemployment. She asked you if Donald Trump is a real, live, honest-to-goodness conservative like you claim to be. Now, were this taking place in a courtroom and she went off on this tangent, and if Ana Navarro were the lawyer asking her the questions, she would say, Your Honor, would Your Honor please direct the witness is being non-responsive to the question. Would you please direct her to answer the question put to her, and if she needs, have the stenographer, the court reporter, read the question back to her. But this is not a court, and there's nobody to stop Janine, and she's not under oath, and there's nobody to stop her from being the liar that she naturally is. Okay, a little more clarity. The court that Janine Pirro sits on in civil cases, the amount in controversy is around $20,000. Yeah, they're not exactly trusting her with mass toxic torts or complex litigation. Thanks, Steve.
In 50 years, minorities, Hispanics, African Americans have jobs.
The four maggots who showed up clapped.
Hate crimes are way up. And wait a minute, the GDP.
Yeah, somebody said hate crimes are way up. Yes, they are.
Under Obama was barely one. We're going up to four. So you want to talk about hate crime?
Yeah, I'll tell you about
it. I fought for a law for hate crimes.
Oh, she fought for a law for hate crimes. Sure you did.
I think it's important, as we said, 89% of the Republican Party still supports him. He still has huge popularity in the country. And if Democrats don't get their you-know-what together, he's certainly going to get reelected.
Uh-oh. Standby is about to get nasty. Whoopi's had about all she can stand. But the Meghan McCain part is arguably true because it's part of something that I've been talking about for a while. She says 89% of Republicans still support him. Well, the maggot base is only about 30-35% of Republicans, or maybe 50% of Republicans. Remember back in before November 2016 when Steve Bannon and Milo Yiannopoulos were talking, and they said easily half or more of the Republican base are alt-right. And how back then I begged, I said, please, if you don't believe me, believe the people who motivate those people. They know the people to whom they are talking. So 11% of Republicans have decided, no, they can't support Trump anymore. But the maggot base is 30 to 35% of the general electorate. And what Meghan McCain says, grieved though I am to agree with her, has the ring of truth. She says it differently than I say it, but the fact of the matter is, if you start at 35%, it's a hell of a lot easier to get to 51 than starting at zero. And every potential Democratic challenger for the nomination to run against Donald Trump is at present, more or less, for all intents and purposes, starting at zero, except Bernie, who will be like 78 years old in 2020. And I'm not engaging in ageism when I say that does not inspire me. Sharp as attack, sure. But at some point in time, we've got to develop a bench on this side of the political discussion. Let's go back.
But for a law for hate crime.
I also think it's important, as we said, 89% of the Republican Party still supports him. He still has huge popularity in the country. And if Democrats don't get their you-know-what together, he's certainly going to get reelected.
Here's my question for you. Here's my question.
I can't disagree with her. I can't disagree with her. But what the question is, what does it mean for Democrats to get their you-know-what together? And, of course, she grew up around her foul-mouthed father. John McCain is known for being one of the most swearingest senators out there. He swears like a sailor. Kind of makes sense. The Democrats need to get their shit together. But the question is, what does that mean? To get our shit together. And what does she mean? She's inferring that the Democrats don't have their shit together. I don't know that the Democrats don't have their shit together. But there's not a lot we can do until November, until we see what the outcome of the 2018 congressional elections are going to be. And there are a lot of people pouring a lot of heart and soul into trying to make the 2018 elections a success. And I guess some of them are trying to provide the security that whistling past a graveyard provides in saying, oh, there's going to be a blue wave. I just would rather not hear about the blue wave and instead see it getting built. You know, with all the love in the world to my progressive friends in progressive states, a blue wave in a progressive state ain't going to do much. You got it. There's Republicans need to be ousted, and a bunch of those are in safe districts. Who's gonna unseat Louis Gohmert? I got a Louis Gohmert clip here. We probably won't get to it. I may not have the stomach for it. He showed up over on the Christian Broadcasting Network, run by a former liquor supply officer, Marion Pat Robertson, and just lied his Christian ass right off. Note coming in from Marty. Bernie Sanders, agreed, sharp as attack, but still polarizing as all hell. Strongly agreed, they need to develop a strong bench. Alan Grayson, too polarizing, though I guess either Gavin Newsom or Kamala Harris. Well, there's a lot of names out there. I was kind of surprised when I saw the inference made the other day when we played that Jeff Merkley clip that there are rumors that Merkley is considering a run. I could support Jeff Merkley. That's a good name. Thank you. James in Illinois says, Janine Pirouette, is she the one who didn't complain about Roger Ailes? Sorry, had to go there. To pirouette, to spin. Yes. Yes, the CBN, the Charlatan Broadcasting Network. Thank you for the correction there. Marty, thank you. But back, okay, because now the moment has come. The amateurs have taken a run. The second string, you know, the second string has had their time with Janine Pirro. She's gotten all the softball she's going to get. And it's Whoopi's turn. And she and Janine Pirro has been sitting there sweating bullets the whole time, knowing that sooner or later, she was going to have to face Whoopi. Here it is. Enjoy.
For you, because you talk about you talk about.
I am not. Judge.
Nobody
no,
is.
No, oh yeah.
Did you just point at me?
Yes.
Listen.
What's that? Yes. It's strictly a video thing, but.
89% of the Republican Party still supports him. He still has huge popularity in the country. And if Democrats don't get their you-know-what together, he's certainly going to get reelected.
Here's my question for you, because you talk about...
I am not, Judge.
You people have Trump derangement syndrome and points at Whoopi. Big mistake. Big mistake, Janine. You're out of your league. You're out of your depth. You're out of your mind. And you're very nearly out of there.
Did you just point at me?
Yes!
Listen, I don't have Trump derangement. Let me tell you what I have.
Okay.
I have a lot of... I'm tired of people starting a conversation with Mexicans or liars and rapists. I'm tired of people starting a conversation about this country. Listen, I'm 62 years old. There have been a lot of people in office that I didn't agree with, but I have never, ever seen anything like this. I've never seen anybody whip up such hate. I've never seen anybody be so dismissive. Clearly, you don't watch.
And Pirro sits there and smirks. But there's she doesn't realize that there's a match sticking out of her shoe and it's been lit. She's going to get the hot foot.
Dismissive. And clearly, you don't watch the show, so you don't know that I don't suffer from that. What I suffer from is the inability to figure out how to fix this. That's my issue. But one of the things that you talk about a lot, and I'm curious about it, is the deep state. How long has the deep state been there, and who's running it?
Well, I want to answer your question, because
I didn't ask you a question. Again, with the non-responsive. She cannot, Janine Pirro, maggot, cannot deal with facts presented to her. She can only evade, distort, and transfer. So the question is real. How long has the deep state been at work? Because Janine Pirro is pretty sure that the deep state is why it rains when she needs it to be dry outside. If her shoes don't match her bag, Janine Pirro is pretty fucking sure it wasn't her fashion choice. It was something that the deep state did overnight. In other words, she's typical maggot.
Your opening statement, which was how horrible it is that Donald Trump is talking about all of these people.
You know what I think is horrible? You said people shouldn't be here, end up murdering
the children of American citizens.
You know what's horrible?
What's horrible when
the President of the United States whips up people to beat the hell out of people.
No.
Say goodbye.
Say goodbye. Whew. And you know what? There is a lesson to be learned from that. I mean, one, don't book them. But if you do book them, and I suspect the booking on this, it was specifically for purposes of this confrontation. If you do book them, don't be afraid to beat them up. Don't sit there and play nicey with them. Don't pet them and coddle them and pretend that during the rest of the days, they're okay people, but they just have a job being shitty. Call them on it. And bless Whoopi Goldberg's heart for doing it. And thanks for the little heads up to let me know what was going on. You know who you are.
Do something I very rarely do. I very rarely lose my cool, and I'm not proud of it. I don't like it. But I also don't like being accused of being hysterical, because that's one of the things I try not to be on this show. So, have a great day. Go enjoy the view.
Yeah.
Thank you to Anna Navarro. Thank you for watching. Thank you for coming. Take a little time to enjoy the view. Bye, y'all.
That was a preemptive apology. Because you see, now what's going to come out of this is there is going to be a shitstorm from the White Wing demanding that Whoopi Goldberg be fired from The View, when Whoopi Goldberg is the reason people tune into The View. And hopefully she will not apologize. Jeanine Pirro is as nasty a piece of work as exists. And she's also a grown-up. She knew what to expect, and she could not handle it. And she really should have known better than to try to get shitty with a strong black woman like Whoopi Goldberg.
Mexicans who come here and kill our children.
Okay, what about the Nazis who kill people, Jeanine Pirro? Kind of, I bet there's nothing about Nazis killing people in your little fucking book, is there? No, that's crickets. And so that right there is what got Jeanine Pirro all butt hurt as she tried to jump up on the cross and create her little personal red hen moment.
I said to her, did you just say that? She said, that's what I said. Get the F out of this building. And she was screaming at me. And I'm walking out of the building like a dog who was just kicked off. So forget about what she did to me on set, which was horrific in itself. But the
oh, it was horrific because poor little Jeanine is used to having her ass kissed, and she got stood up to by somebody who wasn't going to play that shit. Poor Jeanine. Poor, dishonest, disingenuous, dumber than a handful of hammer handles, precious little maggot Jeanine Pirro. Bless her heart. Michael in Madison says, Whoopi! Lots of exclamation points. Damn! I haven't heard Whoopi lose her cool like that since Guinan tore into Picard for playing footsie with the Borg. Hashtag OSTR. I know. It's refreshing to be reminded that we have people who know how to stand up to fascists. And make no mistake, Jeanine Pirro, she's a fascist. At this point in time, if you support Donald Trump, you're a fascist. Marty tells me a lot of calls for Whoopi to be fired from The View, likely a call to have Guinan removed from all episodes of Star Trek, Next Generation, along with the other typical Reichwinger response of death threats. Wouldn't surprise me in the least. But definite cowbell for the Guinan reference. Absolutely. Earther says, Liars, Liberals, and Lassos? That's Jeanine's new book? Wait, get Ron's attorney. That's Coulter's shtick. Well, somebody called Michael the Savage Wiener. Savage. Because that, you know, he started that shit with his book many, many years ago. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Poor little guy. Been completely eclipsed by the madness of Alex Jones. But even before that, he was eclipsed by O'Reilly. And he was eclipsed by Glenn Beck. Is Savage even on the air anymore? That's what happens in the constant one-upping game of White Wing Radio. You just run out of gas. You get out crazied eventually. And there's nothing you can do about it. on the other hand, just checking in a couple of other fora or areas of the stuff that constitute the thorns of Thorn in the Side Thursday. This one particular is a real Lulu. I love it when I've got two stories from entirely separate publications, groups, whatever, and they find a way to dovetail nonetheless. This is a heck of a little story. I have said repeatedly that there is no real way of telling how deeply the traitorous conduct runs in this country. But every now and then, we get a hint. So what we've been talking about ever since the treason summit in Helsinki is the traitorous nature of Donald Trump. And at this point in time, it arguably transfers upon anybody who, at this juncture, still supports him. Well, enter the League of the South. Now, the League of the South is a virulently right-wing outfit. And they are pro-Confederate. They love them some Confederate flag. The devil's diaper. But as of earlier today, over at the website of the League of the South, wait, okay, this gets a cowbell of its own. Classy Todd. Subject line, cowbell. It has come to my attention that the cowbell awards may be converted to Bitcoin. Registration is required. But over to the page of the League of the South, they want to reach out and make common cause with the people they have decided are their Russian allies. Mm-hmm. Here's a section from their subpage. To our Russian friends, it's signed by and presumably authored by the president of the League of the South, Michael Hill. It's a Lulu. You might want to grab the hockey puck for this one. They've got a monochrome logo. It says "For the Southern People, League of the South," and a black St. Andrew's cross over a white shield. To our Russian friends, we will soon be introducing a Russian language section to the official website of the League of the South. We will encourage our Russian friends to explore our organization and ideas regarding Southern nationalism, a free and independent South, and our views of the world in general. Of course, free and independent South. Depending on skin tone, your mileage may vary. We understand that the Russian people and Southerners are natural allies in blood, culture, and, wait for it, religion. I'll be dipped. All them fried chicken eating Southern Baptists going to be real surprised to find out that they got a lot in common with your Greek Orthodox there and your Russian Orthodox. It's going to come to a real surprise to those warriors defending in the war on Christmas when they find out that Hell, they probably ain't even celebrating the right Christmas and Easter. Bullshit on that. Shit, in the Orthodox calendar, sometime Easter comes in October. I'm exaggerating, but yeah, that's why they're Orthodox and not Catholic or Protestant. Protestant just being a, you know, Catholic 2.0. Blood, culture, and religion. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I remember growing up in the South, and we'd have those holiday banquets, and all the little Southern grannies would bring those big bowls of big bowls of borscht and potato pancakes and borshchis and absolutely. You kidding me? I had to make friends with people from Pittsburgh before I even found out what one of the what a freaking pierogi was. Never heard of such things down south. Blood, culture, and religion. As fellow, capitalized the W, whites of Northern European extraction, we come from the same general gene pool. Yeah, well, Bubba, the gene pool you come from is about a centimeter deep and a piss ant couldn't drown in it, but never mind. As inheritors of the European cultural tradition, we share similar values, customs, and ways of life. Yes, and we all can remember down south the halcyon days of being serfs, our ancestors being serfs owned by the Tsar. Yes, absolutely. A cultural tradition. And values, yes. Customs. Down south, all the time, they love to make those little nesting dolls of little painted Scarlett O'Hara's, and one fits into another, and there's Miss Melanie, and she fits into Ashley, and right. And as Christians, we worship the same Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, and our common faith binds us as brothers and sisters. Yeah. The average Southern Baptist would have kittens with crocheted tails at the first whiff of incense in a Russian Orthodox mass. Well, they'd turn purple at the mention of the word mass at all, but never mind. We Southerners believe in society is based on real organic factors such as shared blood, culture, and religion. Only problem is people like Michael Hill there at the League of the South, he doesn't really dare take one of those 23andMe or Ancestry.com little swabby tests, because he's going to find out he got some cousins that he just doesn't want to think about having. Right. Shared blood, culture, and religion, and all that stems naturally from these salient factors in the human experience. As fellow white Christians, capitalize the W, capitalize the C, who are grounded in the sublime traditions of our common European cultural heritage, you know, sublime traditions, sublime, like pogroms, holocausts, vast bloodletting wars that consume entire centuries. We believe that the Russian people and the Southern people are natural allies against the destructive and impersonal impulses of globalism. I can't wait till Michael Hill gets himself a Russian TV set, or a Russian washing machine, or a Russian lawnmower. You're gonna love that. What the fuck is a samovar? Michael Hill might be heard to say. We ought to encourage closer ties between our two peoples and between those who represent our interests in all phases of life, including government, business, education, the arts, and other areas. Michael Hill's going to love it, and all them other members of the League of the South, when their little boys start saying, "You know, Daddy, I want to take the ballet." Fuck you, kid! You're playing football! But what about our common cultural heritage with the Russian? Well, it ain't that, Carrie. It ain't that common cultural heritage, goddammit. Moreover, we should seek peace and goodwill between our peoples as the foundation of all our cooperative efforts. But, Daddy, I want to take back... You'll take clogging, goddammit, and be happy about it. Now go over there and kiss your cousin. There are many threats in the world today facing both our peoples. How are we going to... I told you, I wasn't kidding. How are we going to keep the race pure? Well, you can learn to like your cousin. I did. Love your mama, don't you? There are many threats in the world today facing both of our peoples, from Islamic terrorism, a decrease in white birth rate. I mean it. Well, I don't care if you think chlamydia gene smells funny. You just get over there and get with it. We got to raise that white birth rate. Third world immigration and the machinations of hostile international institutions whose interests and actions are inimical to our common concerns and well-being as white Christians. That's a hell of a lot of words for saying the Jews. A firm and resolute understanding and commitment to cooperation between the Russian people and the people of the South could indeed be the foundation for a better world in which our peoples thrive and prosper far into the future. But should we fail to take advantage of the climate of increasing trust and friendship between us, really, that's what we got, increasing trust? That's, yeah, that's what that was back in November 2016, the run-up to the election, and that was just increasing trust and friendship between us. That's just, yeah, the Russians love us so much, they want us to have elections just like theirs. Yes. There are forces that would like to pit us against one another, even as far as open war. Yeah, because that open war sucks. It beats the... I mean, it's a lot worse than the closed war, like what the Russians waged on us in the time of the 2016 elections, and which, despite Kirstjen Nielsen, the director of the Department of Homeland Security, continues to this day. Together, we can assure that the world for our posterity is bright and white. Oh, I added the "and white" part, and secure one. Let us start on that journey of mutual cooperation today. Our Russian language section of this here website will be our first step in this direction. I can't wait to see how they translate grits into Russian. What is this grits? He's looking like porridge we ate as peasants. Is porridge we ate as peasants. Blech! We hope to hear from our Russian friends soon. May the God of our fathers bless our efforts to preserve our people and their shared faith and culture. That motherfucker couldn't spell Tchaikovsky if his life fucking depended on it. But, you know, that's me, and I'm mean. it's visual, but a cowbell to James, who just sent along a photograph of a goat with the subject line, Russian lawnmower. Jack in Shreveport, and thanks again, Jack, for helping out this evening. Subject line, League of the South. Did the League have any comment on whether Jesus' official language be English or Russian? Well, it's English. I mean, our common cultural bonds go only so far. We ain't going to learn no Russian. Subject line, incense. Steve in New York says, wonder what southern incense would smell like. You don't know, Steve? Well, no, you're from Ohio, so you don't. It smells like honeysuckle and hickory smoke and bourbon. That's what it smells like, Steve. Southern incense smells like honeysuckle and hickory smoke and bourbon. Sometimes chlamydia Jean will put a little vanilla extract behind her ears there. You know what Southern Nazis put behind what Southern Nazi women put behind their ears to attract men? Yeah, the ankles. Giving myself a cowbell for that. Robert in Australia says, are they moving to Russia? Are these people planning on moving to Russia? Bye, bye. Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you. Well, that's a good question, too. Alexander wants to know. Now, is that incense or incest? Well, if the incense works, it's a little of both. Jesus, these people. Well, maybe it is, Randy. Randy says, I thought a pierogi was Polish and a pierogi was Russian. Well, you can see the common language elements at work there, can't you? But don't worry, Poland will be Russian soon. If Putin and Trump get their way, God damn it. And so we reach the end of the program. I had a lot more fun this evening, not talking about fundraising or anything like that, but thank you very kindly again to Jack and to Jenny and to Keith. And I'm missing one there. You'd think with four I could just remember them all. But somewhere along the way, I missed one. Jenny and Keith and Jack and Steve. How could I forget all-around great guy, brother Steve? Thank you, brother Steve. We actually knocked out $110 of the fundraising goal this evening, so thank you very, very much. And just to say where it is on the way out the door, it's at $575. So there we go. It's been my eyes practically crossed a couple of times with the thorn. Those thorns hurt sometimes. But thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this little ongoing conversation. Thanks to those of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you in the chat room to both Sparky and Steve. Thank you most kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa. HeadOn.live. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all. Friday on the front porch tomorrow.